Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？見えない。
あ、こんなとこ
に。I miss you. What's good, Internet?It's March 4th, 2022, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 465. I'm your host, Rob Zachney, and I'm joined by Patrick Klapek.
Is this the new Thursday vibe? Or what's, you put on a new hat?
Ren out of
new
price.
New jacket?
It's my birthday.
How old are you, Ren?
I'm 22. Hello, birthday.
Wait, today?
The day this comes out, yeah.
The day it comes out. Okay.
This... March 4th. 2022, I become 22 years old. Man. Yes.
It is now legal to completely ignore Ren's birthday.
Until yes. Age 30. Yeah. I'm so fucking stoked. I'm good. I'm free.
No, you're not.
I'm free.
No, you're not. You're going to be carded until you're like fucking 30 like I was.
Actually, no. I don't get carded.
Really?
I have a storied history. Well, okay.
I'm furious.
Yeah,
I'm
there too.
Is over here some, just... Okay. God, you said until you're 30. I get regularly carded. I'm 37. I don't think that's ending anytime soon. People come to my front door to do work on my house and they ask, are your parents
your
home?
Yep.
Jesus Christ.
It's worth noting that there are a couple of factors that divide all of us. One... I am a 5'7" woman with a deeper than average voice. And for some reason, people associate voice depth with age. This is something that I learned recently when I was working at a Starbucks, and a girl with the highest pitch voice I've ever fucking heard me speak. And she was like, so you're like in your late 20s. And I was like, no, I'm 21. And then she was like, oh, I just assumed from your voice. And I was like, don't know how you got there, but congrats.
Weird.
But also I'm 5'7", and for some reason, again, people associate height with age. Also, I have a habit of ordering exclusively whiskey straight and neat from bartenders. And guess what? Bartenders do not card you if you say whiskey straight and neat. They're like,
not no. True. Not categorically really? False.
Not
like that is
Patrick.
Also like my favorite drink. And I can tell you, you can look young enough that they will still do it.
Couldn't be me.
I'm happy for
Ren
you.
Ren is just too powerful.
I'm too powerful. I've got bad bitch privilege, so people don't card me. One time I showed up to a bar without my fucking vax card, and I left it at home, and the dude was like, he was really working. He was like, do you have pictures of it? Like, how can we make this happen? And I was like, thank you. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your work in these trying times.
We went to Illinois, like in theory had, they dropped everything on Monday because we're out of the pandemic. But we took the kids to this arcade, and they also served beer. We went with some friends of ours, and it was the first time where
Dave and Buster's,
similar, not an actual Dave and Buster's. Okay. We have one of those, but it's like 40 minutes away. This is a little closer, but we went in the front door, and it was the first time, despite going to places that say make sure you have your vax card, there was somebody there like checking my ID, checking my vax card, checking the ID against the vax card, and I was like, oh well. This is one day before the mandate drops, but I'm glad that they're doing, which means they've probably been doing it in the past. And then I realized this place that we went to is connected to a mall. They're only doing it for the front entrance to their place.
The
entrance to the mall, which is where most people come in the place. Just nobody there, not checking anything.
That's America. That is the most
100%.
Like, that's
in
who
New
we
York,
are.
They're good about it. In New York, at the very least, they're like pretty. They will get very in. They will not let you in places.
My understanding is like if I'd gone to Chicago proper, that they were much stricter down there, but out here in the suburbs, less so, unfortunately.
Right. And our producer Ricardo Contreras.
Now it's probably a bad time to notice that Rob seems a little quieter than normal, huh?
Oh no. My God,
he sounds
He's
great.
Fine. He's crisp and clear.
He sounds great to me.
He's, I want to say, Rob, you've been having some audio issues, but last Monday's podcast, Tuesdays for the listeners, was perfect.
You finally, it was dialed in. I love Rob's dulcet tones.
So we're hopefully,
getting there, see?
Yeah, hopefully that'll just be what's on the track. That's what's important. What's on the track?
It was the Windows boost all along. I think maybe.
That's like who's me to trying say? To. That's like me trying to track down like why my computer won't go to sleep. This new PC that I got, monitors will turn off, but it won't.
They never go to sleep. No.
Yeah, mine also did that for a while. What? And then I replaced the, well, here's the thing. When I replaced that AIO unit caught out,
yeah.
When it started going to sleep. My entire fucking life, this computer has not gone to sleep. So I'm wondering if the issue with my computer going to sleep is just trying to get the water pump to turn on.
It could be everything. Like people are like, here is 100% why your computer is not going to sleep. Cue 12 different like versions of what that could be, which is like, oh, it's always the, if you got an Xbox controller wireless thing, it's always that. You got to go monitor that. Oh, actually, if you got a Wi-Fi chip. Oh, actually, it's the fast boot mode in Windows.
Wi-Fi chip.
You know, it's the USB, it's some sort of other USB controller.
Help me understand really quick. You're going into the fucking Windows menu and hitting sleep and it doesn't do it?
No. Okay. If I force it to sleep, if I hit Windows X and then I hit U and then S, which are the shortcuts in Windows 11 to just jump through those hoops and go straight to sleep from any menu, it turns off the monitor, the hard drive spin down.
Oh, this was not my experience.
Will it stay asleep?
That's the thing. Mine would not stay asleep.
So it would come back on. And I believe what I was told, and this is the path that I followed, was like, you know, like resolve any driver conflicts you might have in your device manager. I did all that. And then put your computer to sleep and then come back when it's awoken itself, bring it back up to life, go to the command prompt. And then there's a power config. I don't know. You could basically ask the computer, hey, man,
but woke
the
you
fuck
up.
Woke you up. Like, what are you doing? And I was able to take a USB device string and then paste that into Google. And then that came up with a website that's like, do you want to know what your device is? And I was like, I do, actually. And I was able to trace it back to, I think it's my mouse. Because several people said, if you have a mouse that like is, the laser is like slightly unaligned or something, where it could be totally usable. You could use the mouse every day. It's totally functional for work and gaming or whatever. But that it will just kind of move a tiny bit and just completely wake itself up. So hopefully, I've done all those things. I can't find out until after this... After I leave my house after this podcast and have dinner with somebody, that maybe I'll come back and the computer will be asleep. Or more is likely, I'm just going to have to keep manually putting it to I guess, shutting it down. Because sleeping, it works for a couple hours. And then all of a sudden, the lights that are installed on this Costco machine.
For like 5 minutes. Like, I will send it to sleep. Like, yes, this is me. Like, I put the computer to sleep. I start walking to the stairs and I'll hear... and I'll come back and it's just back on.
Here's my horror story. My computer for months and months and months was making a Geiger counter-esque screaming sound. And it would do that when I put it into sleep mode. And so Rob, and now imagine you're fucking having the experience you just had, but every time that fucker turns back on, it's like,
like your computer's in pain and it's audibly attempting to communicate.
And now,
oh god,
and now
Ren is Rob, in a Cronenberg movie.
And now, Rob, the computer is in your bedroom. So every time you're trying to lay the fuck down, your computer is just, I lived like this.
Why don't you just shut it down?
This is what I was going
to
say.
I started to shut it down. But like this is what got me in the habit of shutting it down. But this is the life that I lived for 6 months.
Oh my God! Why would you do that for 6 months?
Listen,
it's so long.
Listen, let me be clear. I fixed it because I was on podcasts and streams for a living. I don't care about what happens to me. Come on, world. Throw on all the negative stimuli you can. Fuck me right up. But the second someone in the audience is like, that is the worst sound I've ever fucking heard, I'm like, I know, right? Time to fix it. I will suffer any inconvenience. If it is only my inconvenience. Other people though, no. Yeah. Unacceptable. So
my computer right now is though at a more, it's the most exasperating setup. Now this is completely like home built, etc. And something weird happened during the Windows install that never, it was like one of those things where I was just too tired to deal with that day. And I've never dealt with it since, but also I'm like not sure what the deal is. So when you install Windows, right, it's like shut it down. It's going to restart. Do that a couple times. It would just freeze. It would hang on that part of the install. I was like, what's going on? And sort of pay attention. And then I would realize like the little like power indicator light would never fully flicker off and then start itself back off. And I was like, huh, well, I'm desperate at this point. I just want this thing to run. So hold it down 10 seconds and like hard power cut and shut it down. Then I hit the button, come back up, the Windows install would complete. I was like, huh, that was weird. The computer won't turn off via, like, I can't just hit, like, shut down, and the computer turns off. It will turn off. The computer is off, but it's, like, in this weird standby state where there is still power, like, running through the system as if it's on, and I've got that little power monitor, so I know, Patrick. Like, it is... It like even though it is like shut down and nothing is happening, it is still at about like 80% of its like idle power consumption. And I have to like mash the power
80%?
Button. 80%? Mind you, well, when it's idle, it's actually pretty low, right? Like a completely idle computer where it's just like sitting there on a desktop is pretty like pretty much not doing, the monitor is drawing more power, right, than the computer. Mm. But still, yeah, like it's still like chugging a lot of that juice, and I would have to,
it's
like
chug jug with you.
God damn it. So, but anyway, to shut my computer
out
down,
here, number one victory royale,
it won't stay asleep, and I have to like hold its head underwater with the power button to make it like pass out for the night. Oh, and otherwise, like, it just goes into that idle state and it's not actually off.
Rob, that was haunting. That was haunting to hear.
We need for to talk. Oblivion, can we have a
can we mute Rob? Can we have a conversation with Rob's PC? Like, are things okay? I know that Windows install didn't go well. Like, do you want to talk about it? Like, what happened?
So but here's the other weird part, right? So I've been assuming like maybe
after Rob gently drowning his computer every
Do you guys ever get this thing where like in the middle of the night you hear your computer weeping? Like it sounds like a person and it's like asking for help. I don't know what to do about it, but I put a
basically
blanket
Hugh
over
Jackman's
it.
Character in The Prestige, where he seems totally normal and is just killing a different person every night.
Rob quietly revealing that he's been in the Existence machine the entire fucking time. Camera pulls back. His computer is just like pulsing.
But a different weird part is that I've been wondering if it's like something the power button, like physically, is there something up about like connection that just doesn't like that isn't seated right? I don't know. Except of late now, the computer randomly sometimes does power off and shut down normally like it's supposed to. Completely inconsistently, doesn't seem to, like, sometimes it behaves like a normal computer, but most of the time it like doesn't fully shut off, and it's become a little mystery of my PC.
Rob, can I ask some clarifying questions about kind of about you as a person and kind of what your whole situation is like right now? What's your relationship with witches?
I think witches are cool.
You think witches are cool? Okay, what is, actually, more importantly, a better question is, Rob, what are witches' relationship with you?
Well,
That's a very good question. Arguably, I'm married to one, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's.
That's what the way he talks about his partner. How do you think the way, you know.
Witches are cool.
Rob's partner, can we get on the line?
Okay, I have a clarifying question. What are other religions? Other religions? What are other witches' relationship with your partner? Because now I'm wondering if maybe there's a curse been put upon your home.
That's true. Other witch relationships might not be...
A bit of an area hex, one might say. A storm of shadows.
The PC might have been caught in the effect radius of the hex.
Of a storm of shadows, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway,
How many astromancers is your partner friends with?
So many, but remember, she did go to grad school.
Oh, yeah. So I mean, there's so many alchemists there.
Right. Like,
alchemists,
astromancers, alchemists. The place was lousy with them. I don't know. Like, the computer works in, like, it's a really good PC. It just doesn't do the little quality of life things that I would like. And that's why it has to be drowned nightly. Anyway.
Your computer shares sleeping habits eerily familiar to yours.
Honestly, wow. Mine did too. Because like I am truly the bitch to take powerful sleep medication and then just like walk out into the kitchen and have someone be like, "Are you okay?" And then I'm like, "Huh?" And then I fall down. So like that is the vibes my computer had for a really long time. Maybe that's what's happening. Maybe all of our computers are kind of reflective of our own hearts, our own desires. Patrick, are you kind of like haunted by constantly working such that like you can't sleep?
No? I can't. No, I sleep great. I don't stress about my job at all.
Doing a lot of good work. I'm trying to psychoanalyze you via your computer. That's kind of what's happening here.
No, see, Patrick is, he's like one of those figures that's just like kind of got it figured out in a way that's really infuriating. Because you can ask Patrick, like, Patrick, you seem like you got it really figured out. What do? Patrick don't fucking know. It's just in instinctively just is well adjusted and
yeah,
like,
my name's Patrick, I'm neurotypical.
Doing all that shit.
Someone tip him over. when you get here, I'm gonna tip you over.
There was for a while though, I don't know if Kato just now deals with in the recording, but he was sending me messages. He's like, I've checked the audio file. Is there a cat nearby? And I was like, absolutely not. I'm highly, highly allergic to cats. They make me fucking miserable. So there's a cat in your recording. Like, sent me this file. I'm like,
what? Wait, did you hear it?
Well, Kyle, please elaborate.
There was a ghost cat.
Yes.
There was a ghost cat. And I forgot. Wait.
It was my chair.
Yeah, it was your chair, right?
Oh.
It sounded like a cat, though.
Well, I was worried for St. Patrick's. Like, I know I seem normal, but I've killed a bunch of cats, and now they haunt me.
I was so excited for Patrick to be haunted by ghouls and specters. Like, if you're not, like, obviously mentally ill, at the very least, you could be haunted by ghouls and specters. Come on, dude.
The problem is that I think I would welcome it into my home. Pro ghost household.
So this reminds me, like, years ago I was on this podcast called Gamers with Jobs, and one of my friends Sean Sands was on that, and we were having conversations about like anxiety. They are, but like it's good, the cast is kind of rotated over, like a new generation, okay, etc. But the thing was, we the rest of us were discussing like sort of feeling almost anxious when you're like, oh, I don't know what I want to play, but I really want to make good use of my like free time and game time. And we all realized we've never been so collectively owned as when Sean Sands said, I have no idea what any of you were talking about. He was like, how can you not just play the game you want to play? Why are you making this hard? And it was just like three people just like swinging toward him, just staring at him, like just complete incomprehension on both. But the horror, as we realized, this wasn't a bit. This wasn't him being frustrated. His experience of reality was just knowing what he wanted to do and doing it.
Insane. And we were just like, could not be me.
Yeah. it haunts me to this day because it's like, wow, you like the shit. You can just know. You can just be adjusted.
You can know?
You can know.
That's
you can just know.
Seems like an impossibility. I'm like flipping mental coins every time I make a decision over here.
Nope. There are people, Kato, who simply do what they know is their preference and right for the moment and do not need to analyze it beyond that.
What is, how do you know what is right for the moment?
They just do.
How do you explain me going back and forth between Elden Ring and Destiny this week and not really playing either of them for very long because I can't decide which one I should focus on first?
Patrick, does that ever happen to you? What have you been playing this week, Patrick?
Yeah, Patrick.
I couldn't be very efficient with my time. I don't know. I played 20 hours of Elden Ring in the last week. That game, all right. We might have talked about this when we discussed Elden Ring before, but a thing that's been really fascinating watching as more people have played this game is when you start Elden Ring. When you go to a site of grace, you get there is an arrow on the map gently pointing you kind of in a direction of a main objective to complete the game.
Yes. But,
and so if you follow the path that the game visually puts in front of you when you start, mm-hmm. you can within 2 hours, if you were to stick to that path, mm-hmm. maybe less, like get to the boss at the castle, not Godric, the one before that.
Bowser. It is Marguerite. No, Patrick, you can get to Godric in 2 hours.
You can, but I'm saying, like, for most people, like, that first boss is sort of like the game is guiding you toward this first big sort of like boss check, skill check. And traditionally, when you play a game like this, mm-hmm. you hit those and there's frequently not much else for you to do except I'm here. This is my dungeon. This is my torture chamber. I'm going to knock my head against this boss for 3, 4, 5, whatever the case mm-hmm. may be. And I did a little of that, but then turned around and said, I'm just going to go do something else. And then lost 13 hours to the Southern Peninsula, the Weeping Peninsula in Elden Ring. And I think it's been fascinating to watch. And I'm curious how this breaks down for folks who are new to this series or are coming with, you know, hundreds, thousands of hours of investment. Because this is just totally anecdotal, just observant. But I have found that people who have played these games a lot have said, the thing I need to do now is defeat this fucking boss, no matter how long it takes, no matter how frustrated I am, I'm going to beat it, and then I'll figure out what to do next.
This is not how you play Elden Ring. As someone who's playing this video game, this is not how you do it. I will note, though, I am just better. I just killed him. It's fine.
But I think you started...
Hold on. You started with the fucking imp gif, though, didn't you?
I did start with the
imp gif. What
I
did was the easy mode that they accidentally included in this game.
Hey,
those imps.
Hey,
wow. Look,
no,
those imps.
Wow. Okay. Hey, no.
I also one-shot
Magritte
with
Kato's
the imps.
Kato's right. Kato's right. Okay, here's the thing worth noting. Okay. To give people insight into my build through the video game Elden Ring, I have been playing up until recently where I did a respec because of things that happened in my understanding of my character's sense of self. Had been playing a Dex and Faith build. And Rob is laughing at me because I just said that I had to respec my character because they hit a point in their narrative that was worthy of a respec.
Yeah, that tracks. It's a fucking role-playing game.
I was
sometimes inspiration and self-reflection comes from finding a very cool sword.
That's true. So I was playing Dex and Faith, and I had a pair of claws which do an obscene amount of bleed damage. Just a fucking stupid amount of bleed damage.
That's the one you find in in the castle, right? And
yes.
Okay, so these are Word of God claws?
Hmm?
Were these your Word of God?
No, those weren't claws. Those are just the physical manifestations of the Word of God. Yeah. Those aren't claws. Those are for punching. My claws are for slashing, Rob. Let's be clear.
The hook claw,
but they do.
Right?
I think it's with the... Yes.
Yeah.
I do a stupid amount of bleed damage. My imps also do a stupid amount of bleed damage.
Yeah.
So Godric, we just fucking shredded. We Shredder from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, watch your shit, because Zara's out here and she will fucking ruin you. Just like honestly trounced a lot of early game stuff just with the amount of bleed damage I could stack up as quickly as I could.
Yeah.
And was also like, I never play with shields in Souls games ever. So like, I have always been like a shieldless bitch and have relied entirely on like dodges and parries, because it used to be, back in my day, you could parry with something like a fist weapon, like a set of claws. You could parry with them if they were set in your offhand. So like, for example, in Dark Souls 3, I played with a dueling rapier in my right hand and a set of claws in my left hand. And I would parry with the left hand, stab with the right hand. And then when I was fighting an enemy I couldn't parry, I would switch to the claws and do a ton of bleed damage. Great. But I kind of swept through the game's early areas because like, it was leaning into the way that I play the game normally, which is doing a lot of hits and setting statuses. And I've ended up playing Elden Ring with a status build, which I've never done before, because I've always played like high damage, like just run the boss down characters. And as I've been playing through this time, I've been leaning a lot more into status effects, and it's like totally reshaped how I move through these games. I can now fight at areas that are like several degrees above my pay grade because I have learned the exact status effect that I can fuck every single enemy up with. And so like, I have like a Souls farming location that I was using like a bunch of hours early because I just like learned the status effect I needed, which is like the thing that Elden Ring lets you do, is approach the game in accordance to how your character is built. I can fight in Caelid really easily because I was running a Faith build, and a lot of stuff in Caelid is extremely weak to Faith. And so like, in the same way that like, if you're running a physical attack build, you will or Faith build, you can probably roll through Liurnia really easily because all the shit there is magic. And if you're running a magic build, when you get to Liurnia, everything there is magic and you will have a harder time. And that is, I think, like the strength of Elden Ring, is like people were coming up against Margaret and being like, ah, I don't have the right build for this particular boss right now. And then going back into the open world, finding an area that is better suited to their character at this moment, and then getting strong enough to be able to like counteract the deficits of their particular build against that particular boss.
And that's what I ended up doing. But it took me too long to unwind how I traditionally approach these games. And it's just been fascinating to watch folks that don't have that much, all that sort of like wound up institutional knowledge or like belief of like how I'm supposed to do this. And just like, well, if I can't beat this, I should just keep trying it. And I was like, no, like it's cool. The game is like A, fine, and B, encourages you to leave. And so when I spent all that time when I swept back through, I took out all those bosses with relative ease, but both through sheer like power leveling, but also just better understanding of my build and like finding things that I leaned into poison, and like that was a very delightful status effect to have, because it was just like, I had this sword with like, I kind of just like swung it around in a half circle and it just like shot out this poison mist. And I just had to connect once, and then just, I don't know, I'll run away from the boss for a little while and like watches a fourth of their health bar disappears. And it has been fascinating to watch. This game is so much bigger than any other From game has hit before, like exponentially.
Yeah.
So like, this is like, these games have been big, but this is at like the highest stage of a game hitting. And so while that's fascinating from a perspective, like what it means for From as a studio and like what kind of influence games like Elden Ring can have, but it's more just, I really appreciated watching so many different folks come to the game and find enjoyment of the game in different ways that are different than how I think about these games. And it's like really healthy for my own perspective on like why these games are interesting. And also just, it's like a really, really useful as like, oh, you know, I've just spent, you know, 1,000 hours thinking this is the approach to these games. And then I watch other people just doing completely different fucking things because the game is open-ended enough to allow people to find their path there. And it's just really cool. It makes me very happy so many people are enjoying this game that otherwise have bounced off similar ones in the past or never gave them a chance.
Rob. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, what's interesting about the kind of like ability to go with different places, that it feels almost like it tracks most with Demon Souls to me. Like the way that you could well, I'm going to go to the other whatever stone and like check out this other area because I'm having trouble in like the first area's boss, or I hit like a wall in one area, I could like just leave and go to another one. A thing that kind of starts to get like, even though you could still technically like take different paths through Dark Souls, it does start to get diluted just by like way of like in Dark Souls, the option was like Undead Burg or the Catacombs, and those Catacombs with the fucking skeletons was not a thing you could do at first. It's supposed to be kind of a trick. yeah, Ren?
Oh no, I was getting excited because the other thing that is different is like the other routes in Dark Souls required an item.
Right.
You have to have the item to begin a different route. So like, you know, you could go straight to Blighttown if you have the right item to go straight to Blighttown.
But like in general, it was a little more, there was a little bit more of an obvious, like this is the route. Where in Demon's Souls, like, I mean, and I'm just speaking to the remake, which I assume most of the structural stuff didn't change that much.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah, and like, I like spent a lot of time in the first, like in World 1-1 or whatever, and then like was having some trouble. I was like, well, fuck it, let me go to World 2. And I forget what exact item I found, but I got like halfway through the prison, found some magic item. It was an item or a spell or something that allowed me to then go back to one to unlock that boss. And like that sort of thing didn't happen as much in the Dark Souls going forward, I feel like. But then this feels like a strong return to that original form, honestly. But like obviously with the open freeness of an open world map instead of like teleport stones to different levels.
Yeah, I think it's The route setting that is going to happen and people's different routes of moving through this game are going to be absolutely fascinating to me, especially in terms of like what quest lines people are hitting.
Yeah,
there was a quest line. You can just skip the castle.
You can just
go right past the castle and just head straight to the like the magic area that's like just north of there. That like some people did that within the opening hours of the game. We're like, yeah, I'm just.
Just going.
I didn't know what to do. I just went to the place past the castle. I'm like, well, what? Like, there that's is beautiful.
A divine tower. The divine towers are a key mechanic in this game that you can fucking totally miss if you don't do a particular quest line. And I mean, like, not even like the standard, like, oh, you can miss it. No, I mean, like, you will not have the ability to access that divine tower without bumping into a particular quest line.
What? What's a divine tower? I'm not that far.
Do you want to know what a divine tower is?
I'm 12 hours in. Should I have hit one yet?
No.
Okay. Well, it depends.
I'm not past the castle yet. I fucked around in a lot of
the
other places.
The castle and Godric is around the time when you would.
Okay. Okay.
You can figure out a divine. I mean, like the divine, like yeah, they're like tied to an item that you can equip on your character, and the divine towers tie into that.
Yeah, like an essential game mechanic that like, oh my god,
I love to be 12 hours into a game and not have the essential game mechanic yet. It's very funny.
I mean, there is a in the castle, there is a completely missable. I mean, the castle is a fucking labyrinth. Like it is. I finished it and then loaded up like a wiki. So I was like, I know there's an underground area that I missed, and I have no idea where I would even find. I can't even think of an area that I marked off in my brain that I would go to find it. So I just loaded up a wiki and I was like, I never, not in a million years would I have thought to go around this area. So like, I feel good looking up that solution anyway. But there is a separate area that seems very missable and also requires a stone sword key to get to that has a different, I think it's a whetstone knife or like a variant of that that gives you even more options
when for your Ashes of War. Yes.
Ashes of War, where like normally you have like normal and quality, normal and what, like you have two options, like like based on how it's going to modify the weapon and what attribute it might give to you. This one gives you like four or five, like a huge difference of options for your individual.
Oh my god!
Every weapon.
Oh my and god!
So missable, completely. Maybe you can buy it later. I have no fucking idea. But it wouldn't shock me if you couldn't. And it is just not signposted whatsoever. It is just buried in a completely nondescript, otherwise like ordinary room that when I picked it up, I had to Google. I was like, what is it? It's not a weapon. Like, what did I pick up? And I was like, oh, that seems important.
Yeah, no, this game is fucking wild. Like the whetstone knives, I haven't actually fucked with weapon upgrading much, mostly because I've been sticking to unique weapons, which cannot be upgraded in that means, or also my like claws. There aren't many Ashes of War for fist weapons in this game. And so
I mean that's kind of bummed me out, like, to the point where I also went the Wolverine claws route because I'm a Dex intelligence build, and so it slotted really nicely with how I was playing, where like I have these
tornado
from the
claw.
Distance I'm throwing. Yeah, from the distance I'm throwing rocks, and then I'm getting up close and making you bleed, and like that's been really fun and enjoyable, and like very kind of bloodborne-y in terms of how I play. But I never change my Ashes of War because it's like I'm constantly picking them up. I'm like, oh, cool, is this a new one that I can put on? It's like, no,
never.
No, you can't. And
if
so
you're using claws, fuck you.
Like as I went to bed last, quite literally, as I went to sleep last night, anxiety is not the right word. But I was like kind of stewing on the fact that every time I picked one up, I didn't get a cool new like special move to play with. Like the one I'm sticking with is the one where I kind of dash forward.
Yeah.
And it breaks a lot of stances and can go through shields frequently. I was like, well, I want something else. So I'm just going to spend some time and like upgrade and pick out a second weapon and start carrying that around so I can have a little more variety with it.
This is the first Souls game where I've used multiple weapons at the same time on the same character. I once showed Patrick and Kato a boss fight that I was doing, where basically what my character did was she walked into the
juggling
fucking boss
four
room.
Status effects
yeah,
at
she
once.
Fucking walks into the boss room with a fucking crate full of medieval weapons, slaps them down on the ground, and is like, all right, fuckers, let's get to work. the way that fucking build worked is stupid. I had to open with applying frostbite with my scythe, then I posture broke the enemies with my fist of god, and then I applied bleed damage with the claws, at which point I then started the cycle over again and just cycled between these three weapons in my right hand while also still casting incantations with my left hand the entire time. It was the most on one I've ever fucking been during a boss fight. It is just absolutely ridiculous. I want to go back to one thing.
Mm.
Robert Zachney, you chuckled. You had yourself a little party when I said that I did totally revamp my character stats in accordance with a narrative moment that I felt was appropriate. Can you elaborate on that chuckle? Can we discuss?
My feeling, just from what people said about the From games and like what I've observed, is that
in your
general,
2020 game of the year, Demon Souls?
Yeah.
But I don't, that is one game, is a remake, and it's one game out of many. I don't want to extrapolate too much about that. But it is always, in that example, I would say my character still felt like a cipher. Like, it was my character had a compilation of stats, a lot of points dumped in maybe the wrong columns. But, like, it's not like I ever felt.
What does luck do? I keep putting points into luck.
Yeah, that may have been suboptimal.
There was one sword that you would have had a great time with that scales with luck and scales infinitely.
Apparently,
the blue blood sword. Gamers.
I was told, but then people were like, you know, but by the time you get the blue blood sword, you kind of won't need the kind of like you'll kind of be rocking with anything at that point. I was like, well, fuck. Anyway, point is, my character didn't feel like this is a character with an inner life. No. My character felt like good with some weapons, not good with others, good with some types of has some skills, but like not others, but didn't feel like, my character's had a crisis of faith. If only I could dump my remaining faith points and put them elsewhere. That didn't feel like a thing that like even were feasible would be a thing that would be like encouraged to like relate to the character on that level. Like that did not feel like it would be meaningful in that game.
I think that the Souls games have always had that problem. I think Elden Ring does.
I'm not even sure I'd say it's a problem, but
they leave a lot of space. And in previous Souls games, I have struggled to fill that space. I've been able to like think of a basic character concept because this is how I play video games, right? I go into video games, I look at the character concept, I look at the like character creator, and I instill the character with as much meaning or interest as I can, and then I start the video game. And the thing that actually Elden Ring does that helps with this is the amount of game spanning quest lines in this are pretty significant and gave me the room to kind of explore that space in more interesting ways. And so like also Elden Ring's world building is full enough to create an interesting like place to play around in. And so like starting as a character who has a very particular relationship to one of the game's many faiths, coming into contact with different incantations throughout the game encouraged me to think about her in different ways, right? Like the way in which like in previous FromSoft games, the faith stat has applied to incantations and pyromancies.
Mm-hmm.
And generally incantations, the vast majority of incantations fall within the dominant religious order of a given video game in the series, right? The thing about Elden Ring is that faith in Elden Ring feels less like faith in a particular god and more like a broad belief stat. And so, like, as I've played this video game, my character, who started off like wearing religious garb and wearing like church armor, suddenly started finding incantations that were totally different and completely unrelated to the faith that she'd professed her entire life, but worked just as well mechanically, which like opens a question for me when I come into contact with something like that, right? What does that actually mean for this character that I am playing in this moment? And for me, that developed into like an interesting crisis of faith where she's like, okay, how do I interact with this now? Like, what does it mean to have a high faith stat in this setting? And for me, it became like, okay, instead of believing in a god, she believes wholeheartedly, like across the board. But belief does not equal love in her particular case. So like most times people talk about faith, faith is an act of love, right? To believe in God is to love God. For Zada, that is not the case. To believe is to believe in the presence of something and to be able to channel that presence. And so like the game gave me the tools needed to build that narrative. And I actually think that one of the things that I wanted to touch on in my review, but ended up leaving out, because I think I'll need more time to sit with it, is that the way in which Elden Ring allows for route setting and allows for characters to approach this world in radically different ways is actually creating a lot more space for that personal narrativization. Right, the fact that like two characters can have totally different builds and go off in totally different fucking directions is in some ways feels to me like it is encouraging the player to think to themselves, what do I find interesting about this world? And what do I think this character finds interesting about this world? Let me go there and do it.
I guess when I look at games like this, I view the character as more like a mech chassis more than a person with like a story and a narrative.
Yeah, that's right? I'm the same way. And like listening to Ren talk about her character, all I could think the whole time was like, I wish I could play games like this way. It sounds really fascinating and cool and engaging with the character. Part of that's just like I same reason I struggle with things like playing D&D and other like tabletop role playing games where you have to role play and invent and like do the creative part on your own. I rely so much on the game giving me something to work with, and then I build on top of that absent that, when it's just sort of a paper character that you're projecting onto with the tools of the world around it, I find that I'm like Rob, that I know this is just sort of like a warrior that I'm putting things onto, and or more of an action figure than it is actually something with meaningful sort of like agency and emotion in the world around it.
On the other hand, like I could totally say, like I am curious if like Elden Ring does, by virtue of the fact that like in Demon's Souls, levels are so programmatic that it's like, there are many different choreographed steps you can learn to get through these areas. They'll be different building it based on how you build your character. But because the levels are like so tuned that way, I do wonder if simply the different way you engage with Elden Ring from the start creates more of that space where like, here's a world and a character, as opposed to Demon's Souls, much more like here is a
memorized series.
Here's a racetrack. Here's a racetrack.
Yeah. Like, there's, and actually similar to racing, like there is a racing line. Like there really is. Like your build is going to determine what that racing line is. But once you know how your build works and how they interact with the tricks and traps in front of you, you're kind of just following the choreography and getting to the end.
And that's where I think that space recontextualizes but does not redefine Elden Ring, right? That is where the recontextualization is taking place, is in making that character feel more grounded, right? They're giving players more tools to make their characters feel like characters as you go. one of the systems they add partway through the game is clothing alteration, which is like, sure, players have done fashion souls for a very long time, but like one of the big moments in like this character narrative for me was realizing that there is a version of the Confessor's armor. The Confessor is like the starting class that I began the game with, that is like a church knight slash spy. Mm-hmm. There is an altered version of the Confessor's armor that removes all of the religious accoutrement. It removes the cowl. It removes the symbol of the order. And when I saw that, there's another thing that happens, and this
it's an affordance for your experience.
Like, it's an affordance for your experience. Yeah. And also, this is, Patrick, you said you're doing int, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Kata, what are you doing?
Int dex.
Int dex? Okay.
In that case, seems to be the popular sort of like setup from a lot of people I've seen playing the game.
People, if you do not want a spoiler for a particular thing, for a particular quest line that involves the dragon incantations, just don't listen for the next like 30 seconds. I'm putting my thumb up. Is that okay? Can I? Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Every single time you go to the altar of dragon communion and sacrifice a dragon heart to this fucking altar that gives you access to these dragon incantations, these like dragon based religious spells, I noticed that after about 3 or 4, my character's eyes had changed color. I did not notice this for hours and hours, and then I panned the camera around in a particular moment, and I saw that her eyes were blinding yellow with those like reptile-like vertical pupils. And then I texted a friend and was like, did this happen to your character too? And they were like, what do you mean? And they pulled up the game and they were like, oh my God, I thought I built my character like that. And they hadn't. And so Elden Ring is, in a way that like the series has always been, but to a different degree, willing to change your character as the world changes them. And like, that is really exciting for me as someone who likes doing this narrativization. Getting that moment where I turned the camera around and was like, oh, okay, she isn't just experimenting with other faiths. This experimentation is changing her. Her relationship to the world is changing through this aesthetic marker. And then if you combine that with losing the religious accoutrement from her armor, suddenly like, you have enough to signal a change in a character if you want that signal to be there. If you're looking for something, it's there. And that is the part that is really exciting to me. In the quest lines, right? By following a particular quest line, you are having access to a particular set of areas, and like you are interacting with this one character in a very particular way. And that quest line is deeply interested in faith and what the game understands magic to be. And like all of this shit happens to perfectly align with the version of this game that I am playing as this one particular character. And I bet if you did a totally different fucking build, you would have that exact same, you would have the exact same number of cool things that can happen to and get your character involved in that will change them. And so like, that is why I think that Elden Ring is so good for me in particular, and why I've clicked with it. Like, I've played all of the Souls games to completion. Like, I love them a lot, but none of them have clicked with me narratively in this way. I love Dark Souls 2 and Dark Souls 3 from like a narrative structure perspective. They're as like pieces of like art and design that come to a particular conclusion. I think they're phenomenal. I think they're like doing incredibly, incredibly cool shit and doing it extremely well. But their characters never felt like characters in a way that like my Elden Ring character does. And I think that's really fun. And yes, this is of course like an effect of how I play video games more than anything else. But like the fact that I have this place to play around in that I didn't have before is very exciting to me.
I mean, I think it is partially also in the tradition of what an RPG is, right? A lot of RPGs kind of ended up becoming narrative forward because people who hadn't played TTRPGs, right, were like, you're being presented with situations and then you come up with the other end of it, like what your character does and how they react. Like, that wasn't translating well to games. So there was like, if you want story, you were going to put it in, we're going to put in the story and like your character's reactions in there as mechanic. But this kind of with like has like the silent GM like feeling to it for me, right? Like, there's all these open threads. Like, they've prepped an entire world, and like you end up narrativizing things because of the choices that you make. Like, you can drop or pick up quest lines like all over the place in just the opening area of this game, like the bunch of different NPCs, and just like deciding whether or not to be like, you know what, I don't actually like that person. Like, I met an NPC the other night where I'm like, I feel like my guy would kill this dude on sight, and so I did. And that quest is probably gone now. I don't know if it was important or not. Like, I don't, but like, that's what my character, who I played a prisoner. And like, I like got it into my head that they were very much like against most of the other nobles in this place. It's like it has all these options here for you to lean into in the way that like not very, you know, like in an open GM, like a GM that's not going to try to railroad a party, has like in a good GM has like the openness that, like, you know, you can go and make the story yourself. This one has that more than any of the other ones, even though they were all technically RPGs in the sense that you put stats into a character sheet. But this feels more like it has both ends of that RPG, like open-endedness.
Trailing off like a From Software NPC.
Open-endedness. I was like, why does that word sound wrong?
Open-endedness, Eternish.
All right, well, we're going to end in this segment and take a quick break.
Stupid. And... fucking terrible. Oh, my God. That
was great. Rob, don't let the haters get you.
Oh, my God. No, do.
Back after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I too have been playing an RPG. I'm sorry, a car PG.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. God damn it.
Wow. From that transition to that cool. Opening.
Nice. Nice.
Transition as good as your Logitech racing wheel.
Writing is an art form, and so is oration. And a lot of people forget that. Like good conversation.
Well, united
is
by the skill art of that rhetoric.
Exactly, rhetoric, conversation, they're skills that you develop. And, you know, one thing a lot of people are saying about Rob Zachney is that, much like he was a master of the racing wheel that he fucking hates, he too is a master of rhetoric and oration. I saw some real masterful driving today, Rob.
Okay. love to hit the brake. Feels good on my feet.
It feels good to hit the brake.
My toes love to brake.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so for people who didn't
watch
today's...
And the wall feels good to break upon.
For people who didn't watch today's stream, it should be Thursday's stream, yes. Kato and I were playing a little bit of Gran Turismo 7.
Grand.
God damn it, Patrick.
Fucker.
No, he meant that's grand for you. Like, you're really grand.
Oh, yeah.
No, grand. Thank you, Patrick. Mm-hmm. Lord Patrick.
Why don't they just call it Grand Racing Cars? All right. So, the stream could have gone better. And honestly, it was my commitment.
I don't know. I feel like the stream went well.
Stream was great. I watched part of it. That was terrific viewing.
It's very entertaining.
I love art.
So, So here's the thing. This is me. This is me being a river to my people yet again. So I've been playing Gran Turismo for about a week with the PlayStation 5 controller. Feels very good. The controls are very well tuned for it. In my review, I talk about like all the great like things it communicates about the car, its handling, etc. It's really good at that. People started asking, like right after I posted the review, they're like, "Hey, you play with a racing wheel?" And I was like, "No, it's a console racing game. I only use my racing wheel for PC games." It doesn't even. Then I looked and I saw the PlayStation logo like on the center of the racing wheel, and I was like, "Oh, huh." Well, I guess that probably implies it would work.
Wait,
there's a literal PlayStation. Wow, there's a PlayStation button on the wheel.
And Rob Zachney is out here being like, "Surely not. No, this would not. I would hate to.
I would never have purchased a racing wheel with a PlayStation button on it.
I would never besmirch my wheel with the mark of the PlayStation. Oh no. Surely this was a misprint and could not have been on my PC racing game wheel. The horror!
I wish Rob used his hands as much as you are now, as he talks.
Rob just like, ooh. Just like flicking his hands up constantly.
So
in a huff.
Hold on. You need to understand something. There are like two
can't
wheels.
Can't talk to a woman like this.
There are two wheels. One is the G29 and one is the 920. One works on Xbox. One works on PlayStation. I just forgot which one. Okay, that does have, now that I look at the... Okay, there's a big PlayStation logo though, in like where the badge would be on a real like car. That's the PlayStation logo.
I almost spit my fucking water. I just tried so hard not to coat my second monitor.
So I was like, this will be a great thing to do on stream, and I'll look so cool. People will be like, because people are like, Rob, why don't you like, you know, you play racing games a lot. Like, show us you at your most hardcore. And I was like, people will love to see me doing that. So we set up a little stream, and I started out playing on the controller, and I looked great, like total Chad stuff. Just like, you know, notching wins, just effortless.
People were always saying this.
Yeah, people were like, that Rob Zachney is such a Chad.
We actually had to get Chad-y. Them to step. It was getting spammed in the chat. We had to like put in like a, you know, put the mods had to step in.
Mm-hmm. Please, no.
Rob Chadney.
So I had spent the morning, I'd create a little setup where like I could switch to the racing wheel. I'd made sure it all worked. And so in the middle of the stream, like, we moved to the racing wheel setup, which I had not used except to like verify the controls working right. And I ate shit. It was bad.
It really didn't look that bad.
Admittedly, it got way worse when I turned off traction control. Like, yeah. There was a moment where I did turn Nakato, and I knew that I was throwing myself on the fire. I knew, like, this was going to be where it broke bad, was going to be where I turned off all the driver's aids and just, like, try to be one with the road through my Logitech whatever the fuck wheel. And it didn't go well. I have a few theories about this. One is that the wheel's not very good. The pedals, like the accelerator pedal is loose, but the brake pedal is like incredibly stiff, has no travel at all. So it's very tough to know like how hard you're braking. Just a little brush on it like causes to go to saturation, but then like to get the pedal to go to maximum depress, you've really got to like mash your foot down. It's really stiff. This all matters. It matters.
It does,
Patrick. But the other thing that I did was, yeah, we turned off all the driver's aids, which was like, at a baseline, the game wants to give you some traction control help, stability control. It wants to give you counter steering help. So like when the car begins to like spin away from you, when you start instinctively trying to correct, the game will sort of step in and behind the scenes also input some controls to maybe help you gather up the car. And the thing is, like, all console racing games do this. Their assists, like good assists, make it feel like you're doing everything. And then just very invisibly, they are sort of like rounding off the rough edges that would come from using a controller. When you go to a racing wheel setup, that stuff would still be helpful, but you do need it less. Like the fact that like you now have a full steering wheel where you have a huge range of motion where you can be really precise. You do need steering assistance less. You can still benefit from it, but you need it less.
Can I ask a question? One thing I noticed, I was dipping in out of the stream, was that it seemed you switched from first person to third person when you switched to the wheel. Was that also part of the process, or was that just aesthetic?
No, Kato wanted to see the pretty cars.
Yeah. Okay. I thought maybe it had something to do with the range. When you brought up the range of motion point, I thought, maybe something about the first person made that easier to deal with peripherally in the third person format.
There was moments where Rob almost traded paint with other people. And I was like, wow, you made it out of that unscathed. I wouldn't be able to do that unless I was in third person, which is the way that I play racing games. I need to be able to see the whole car to kind of like make the physical connection to how it's moving.
And to be fair, the game looked fucking fantastic from outside the car.
Yeah.
Like, you move the car into the chase cam, and now the car is relatively small in the field of view, and you just see the whole, like, skybox and the track. Game looks great, but I want to feel like I'm racing the car. I want to feel like I own the pretty European sports car.
Totally. I also did notice that Rob did actually start trading paint more once he was in third person view, which is not an indictment of Rob. It's just he's a first person driver, and when he went into the third person, his ability to judge distances between one car and another seems to have slipped a little bit.
Or is it that was the baby game arcade camera? And then I started treating it like a baby game arcade and just started roughing these people
up. The wheel is bad. The camera is bad. Rob's great.
I genuinely don't like the pedals on the steering wheel. Like, this is like, that's the main issue. I think there's also just ergonomically, it just doesn't fit at my desk real well. Like what I like to do is I like to do left foot braking. Which is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Like throttle right foot, brake on left. There is a noticeable, like, it noticeably slows you down if you have to like move your foot to brake.
Sure.
Do you do that in real life, or is this just your racing thing?
It depends what conditions are in real life. Most of the time, okay, I'm going to use right foot braking because left foot braking is tiring. It's way easier to just like put that thing a little foot rest down there. Yeah. At 70, 80 miles an hour highway speeds, who gives a shit about that? If things are super dicey, I might do left foot braking. Or if
like in the snow, like in winter weather, like when you're like managing gas brake more, like is that when you employ it, or is it
like when you're getting away from a heist?
A little bit. If I'm on a cool, just a fun like little twisty bit of road, it might be more fun to do a little bit of left foot braking. But coming down to Waypoint, like a year or two ago, I got caught in this like terrifying downpour. And that was probably the like scariest thing I've ever done in the car, was like, just wash out conditions you couldn't see.
Oh,
and like, just, you know, you go above 40 miles an hour and you could feel the tires just start to lose like contact with the ground. And so that was so dicey, like that was a case where like you're constantly like feathering both pedals at times to try to like, where's the road, you feel the tires sort of like cushioned down, so stuff like that. But
so you're saying in that situation you'd need a heavy wet.
Like, what
you said, in that situation you would need some heavy wets.
I would need heavy wets, and I yes, didn't have them.
You saying that while me also seeing the tweet on the timeline go by that says Trifingers butt hole, colon, how Elden Ring sparked my curiosity, altered my sexuality, and changed who I am, my newest for Vice.
Just, which I did retweet.
I did. Yeah. So I was, I clicked the retweets to see like some of the sourcing on this. Is like, oh, Rend retweeted this. This adds up. This adds up. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, so.
Back to your wet tires.
Yeah, but also just like it made me realize like, oh, wow, if you like people with full sim rigs, you can put the pedals relative to where they would be with an actual steering wheel. So it can be nice and comfy. Instead, I got little alligator arms like trying to drive like this, which makes it hard to make like the hard turns. I'm doing a little thing where it's like I'm hunched over the wheel because that's how it feels when I'm using that wheel. So it's partly desk issues. But yeah, the main thing I did where things got really chaotic was I turned off all driver's aids and all hell broke loose. Like I could not drive. Like the minute we took traction control down to zero, I could not keep that car on the road to save my life. It was humiliating. And sometimes I would know like, okay, I know where I made a mistake there. But other times, like there was this one moment where I thought like just making a routine turn and suddenly the car just spun out. And I was like, I have no idea where that came from. I have no idea what I did. Must have been just like a little bit of like a millimeter too much, travel on the accelerator or something. So, yeah, just like completely owning myself throughout today's stream. But it was kind of fun. Like I've never played Gran Turismo again with the steering wheel. It was kind of cool. Like now having done it, I'm like, I must master this.
I'm gonna post so, Rob. Recently, I was at. I took my daughter to. She has like this weekend science class, and I took out the Steam Deck there. And this person across the way from me, one of the other dads, lit up. Was just like, "Holy shit!" Like, is that a Steam Deck? And I just let him play with it for an hour. So then we like traded numbers, and I was like, oh, he's really into video games. It's rare for me to meet someone like that out here in the suburbs. Like, we should try and hang out. Kids are the same age. And he sent me some messages because he was building a huge racing thing in his house. And I've pulled the pictures of it. And I want to send them to... I'm putting them in the Discord right now. They're uploading. This should go through now.
Oh, my God.
This is the setup.
Oh, my God. Yep. This is a fucking gamer. Wow, look at
the kind
of
person that like runs away from his wife and like asks a stranger, is that a Steam Deck? Can I play with it? Like not super shocking that the logical extension of that is. And then he said like this is like mid development.
Hey, is that a Box fan?
Sure looks like
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Is that to simulate wind
that's
during the race?
That's to simulate wind, isn't it?
Oh my God.
Amazing. Amazing. Galaxy Brain. Fucking 4DX experience.
Dudes fucking rock.
Yeah.
Dudes rock. Dudes rock.
This is...
Like to show people, like to try and, like the person has a box fan attached to the front of their big professional or like professional amateur sort of like racing contraption that they've made. And it's like, it's just this, you know, this $10 Walmart box fan strapped to the front with a cord going off to the side. And also if you'll notice in the first picture, if you see where the headphones are, draped up just like on a water pipe, like off, yes. off to the side.
It's, good. It's beautiful. Who here has seen the film Burn After Reading?
Oh, God. I literally thought about that fucking chair. No!
In Burn After Reading, there is a guy making a thing. And at the end of that movie, if he'd pulled the fucking tarp off and revealed this, I would have been 100% unsurprised.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good movie. That's a good movie.
Shout out to Burn After Reading. Shout out to the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
It was fun doing the setup. It was fun sort of like showing off that aspect of the game, and I don't know how much I'm going to play of it in that way. But it was definitely cool to try it out. Gran Turismo, really really good game. It seems like it's getting pretty like universally like friendly reviews. I think there's something about this game that is hitting like the exact nostalgia buttons that people are looking to have hit. right now. I don't like something about it was even as I start playing, I was like, I think I am primed for this in a really weird way. And I'm not sure I would have been because if you asked me like to describe Gran Turismo, like pretty much throughout its history, I would say it's always been kind of the stodgy racing game. That's the thing is like, I'm not coming to this as like, I love Gran Turismo. I have really fond memories of Gran Turismo 2 on PlayStation 2. Like it was kind of a holy shit. Like this is what, you know, consoles can do now moment. But even then it was like such a series that was so, what's the way to put it? Like kind of bloodless almost in its appreciation of the car. It was a bit like getting, I used to go to the Chicago Auto Show, right? And like one of the things that was fun to get there, if you're a little kid, was like just all the brochures that the manufacturers brought with them. Gran Turismo felt like a huge bag of brochures for cars. And that can be fun, but also there's kind of a aesthetic that like the sales brochure has, right? Where it's all like abstract lines and like pristine, environments. That's kind of how Gran Turismo.
Even the way when I don't care for sim racing games, especially, yeah. But if you were to ask me, what do I think of when I think of the series? I think of the replays. I like lots of racing games have replays, but like the Turismo series, like, especially early on, was like, hey, our game's going to look better in replay mode. We are going to try and achieve a cinematic flourish that is going to give you the sensation of watching racing on TV. And my understanding is like with this version of the game on the PS5, like the only way to get, you know, like ray tracing in the game in real time is to watch the replay. So you can see your game, your race with ray tracing and it'll look as beautiful as possible, but it's only in the replay mode, which I think only emphasizes like that sort of like thematic approach to like cars, how it appreciates cars, like the level of detail that like Sony allows this studio, Polyphony Digital, to like just kind of go off and do this stuff for years, and then eventually they come back with a game. It seems like GT Sport from
they
like
skipped
a year
an
or two
entire
ago.
Generation. They yeah. skipped the PlayStation 4, which is the
GT,
like,
GT Sport was basically
is.
Like a mini GT because Sony was like, please fucking put out something so we can say that you did
and
something.
And what it looks like, what they put out was their multiplayer mode for the game they were working on. That's the other part. It's like you go into like the sport area of the menu and it's just GT Sport. That's right. What it is. So like, yeah, Polyphony's like the check is so blank that like Sony's like, all right, PlayStation 4. Polyphony's like, catch us after. Like that is like they last released a mainline one of these in 2013. And somehow in those 8 years, I went from like, oh, like Gran Turismo is so stodgy. Oh my God, I got old. Oh no.
Oh shit. I mean, like 8 years, that's 30
I'm
to
sorry
40,
for your
Rob.
Loss.
I mean, like that's like the way someone appreciates even a thing like an automobile in the course of like a decade, like that's a long time to have a relationship change with an object.
But maybe that is like almost certainly part of it is like the relationship does change. And I think maybe something else is that so many games have come along since then not being Gran Turismo. And that in some ways throws into stark relief what's kind of nice about a Gran Turismo experience.
Well, like Forza, like, right? Like we haven't had Forza was essentially Microsoft's answer to the Turismo series. And then you have the Horizon being like, well, rather than having the arcade get in our sim, let's just have the arcade go be the arcade. And then the most recent Horizon is a car looter like game. Like it is a yes. celebration of cars, but like, not real, like in a different, totally any like got to catch them all Pokemon sort of way, where you're not really attached to any one car and it's just sort of a free for all. And then that, like, I don't think you can get more on the other side of the, like, I'm going down a volcano in the most recent Horizon.
Yeah.
And maybe you'd be lucky if there's a ray traced volcano off in the distance, if it just happens to fit within the scenery of a racetrack in Gran Turismo 5. But it's almost like the extremes of the Horizon series. This is just circumstance, but
just imagine like Wes Anderson Mount Fuji. I was a volcano. I'm not anymore, but back in my day, I could erupt.
My favorite car starter car is Toyota Dial.
What?
that was a Toyota Dial joke.
Wow.
What?
Good. Yeah.
Second generation Pokemon
starter. Totodile.
Second gen Pokemon starter.
Kato, you were supposed to save us. You just made Rob and I look like assholes as nobody laughs at her joke. And
oh my, I'm crying.
Oh, listeners aren't going to get that because we had to cut a lengthy conversation from the beginning of this podcast.
That is the fucking thing I think you've ever said. Oh my God, eviscerated, misting up Rob's acting because I said Toyota Dial. Jesus Christ.
So, but I'm also like, so I spent winter break like playing a bunch of Forza, and something hit me there is like, their handling model is really unforgiving, but like playing a bunch of that game also made me realize like, wow, it's a bit generic and it's a little bit like so invested in making the cars feel a little bit like overpowering that you're just like barely in control of them, that in some ways, like it's kind of a less of a showcase of like how cool these cars are and more of like a showcase of like how kind of frustrating they all can be in like these really similar ways. And Gran Turismo playing it, it's like, okay, it just feels more like a car in some really important ways. Like the things respond more predictably. The way they sort of like feel on the track surface feels like a little more convincing and a little bit more individualized from car to car, which makes sense. Like if you go even Forza Motorsport, which is less of a Horizon is like trying to, it's like a slot machine that only throws jackpots. Mm-hmm. And so at every moment with Forza Horizon, cars just spilling out onto the floor. Ring, 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 ring. And like,
you kind of can't screw up, right? Like there are more idealized cars you can, but like really the game's like, I don't know, you'll be fine. Just pick the car you want to race as, like you'll be good.
We'll make it work. Yeah. It doesn't even matter that much. Like what you're rocking. But even like Forza is, there are so many different cars in it because like Forza kind of wants to like, it throws everything in there. And I would say maybe if it's a little bit more pitched toward the American market, it's maybe way more interested in fucking cars, trucks, I mean, than like Gran Turismo. Like Forza throws all that shit in there. And it ends up feeling a little bit less interested in any one car and just more interested in like this massive Rolodex of cars. That sort of gives you, it's still really good, but like coming to this, it's like, wow, this game seems to be way more focused on its library of cars and seems to have way more of a handle on how to represent them differently from one another. That was really charming.
It sounds like Forza has a more consumptive approach to like cars and car culture as like a mode of consumption versus like Gran Turismo, which is more interested in like cars as a personal tool that you like develop a particular relationship with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Gran Turismo, like honestly, like it frequently feels like Polyphony or maybe like the designer Yamauchi. They'd be happiest throwing gallery shows for these cars and like writing
the game.
Artist
the game
statements.
Part is secondary.
Yeah.
Good thing we figured that out 20 years ago, because I don't want to think about the game part anymore. How do we spend more time figuring out the tiny details of the interior and represent that in the game?
And honestly, they fucking nailed that. Like, it's man, I if they're not doing ray tracing, I need to sit down and watch the Digital Foundry video on this, because those are the people.
I've heard the ray tracing in the like the cafe that you're like propped up in is incredible. Look, like I've heard, like that little cafe looks amazing in the game.
My only beef with the cafe is that the table settings are too formal for the vibe they're going for. Like that is, people can tell me maybe your classic iconic sort of like Japanese retreat from the world coffee house is a little bit more like a formal dining room. But for me, I'm like, there's like plates on plates in this. That's not, you know, that's not going to happen in a cafe that I'm going to. Like, I'm not. Why is there Sauterne glass next to my little play setting? I don't need that. But still, it's still gorgeous in there. The little people like popping up to tell you like the history of your car is a lot of fun. So, yeah, like it's been a week with that game, and it has been a consistent pleasure to just sort of like go and commune with the spirit of automotive history. Now, of course, that I've found a way to ruin it for myself, I'm probably gonna get to work doing that. The good times are over. Now it's going to become a racing wheel game until I'm good enough at it. Because I was so happy just like upgrading my car. Like I would eat shit in a race and I'd be like, wow, that went really poorly. It's probably because I didn't buy the upgrades I need to show off my natural skill. And so this is old school as hell. This is the last thing I'll talk about. So Gran Turismo has always been this way, but I forgot how wild it is, which is that you can just buy better shit for your car and upgrade it and car go faster. And in Forza, like the systems still exist, but they're much more aggressive in that game about capping how many performance points your car can have. And by the way, they do this in sports car racing. It's called balance of performance, and it's the wildest shit. Do you know how they managed to make like every manufacturer competitive in like Grand Touring racing or Le Mans racing? I know you're dying to know the answer to this, Patrick. Like, how do all those manufacturers field cars that are perfectly competitive?
How do they?
They homologate the cars down to identical performance envelopes.
They homologate the performance envelopes?
They homologate.
So
now I'm back in. Tell me about the homogate.
So they do this thing, homologation, where they make all the cars.
I thought
cars.
They banned that.
I also do homo and gay shit.
Oh.
The thing is.
Thing about homologation?
Well, the thing I'll say is. They do kind of tamp down on the expressiveness that the cars are allowed. Like it's very much like some cars are a little too much, others not enough. And they just sort of like make sure they all hit the appropriate amount of raciness. And the reason they do this is because like no manufacturer is going to compete in a series where they just eat shit every week. Like nobody's going to be like, and there goes the Cadillac team sucking it up and just getting completely owned by every other car on the circuit. But somehow they take all these different cars and they make them perform pretty similarly, which means like you have to go in one car with a bigger engine and like that engine has to be less powerful and slower. Another car with like really good handling. What if you handle a little bit less well? Maybe we'll throw some ballast weights in there to like bring everyone into the same performance band. It's wild that they do this. Forza was really aggressive about that, where you couldn't bring a car into an event that was like too strong. Gran Turismo is like, just put whatever you want on that car. Just let it all hang out. And so you can take your shitty little car where you're not real competitive and you can be like, I'm just going to put a massive new engine in that car. And Gran Turismo is like, cool, done. What else you want? What about like huge, like powerful racing brakes? Cool, done. And so you can in that game, and it encourages you to do this. If you're not like winning races, you can just buy stuff that makes your car enormously faster and makes you a better driver. Like when you put racing slicks on this car, softest racing compound, massive grip levels, you will just be able to go through corners and your car won't skid. Did before, now it doesn't. And it will feel like you're awesome. You will be like, my God, I have complete control of this car. But really, you've just like bought good shit that the other drivers on the track don't have that allows you to get away with stuff that there's no way that they could. And it feels fucking awesome. You like, you played this event and you're like, oh, I couldn't win. And now you watch the car that like was beating you in a straight line. And now you are just chasing them down like a cheetah after a gazelle. And did you get better at the game? Did you earn this? Define earn. I earned credits that I spent on car upgrades. And they made me better. But I had to earn those credits. So I deserve this victory, which gives me more credits.
And much like a cheetah heading down the straights, you also struggle to rapidly change direction and go careening into a wall the moment that, that a hard turn comes up because you are not used to your new vehicle.
It is possible that Gran Turismo, even though it is a celebration of sports car and sports car, car culture, has amply demonstrated why I should not buy a sports car. Like, this is a game that's very much like, if you buy a sports car, you are going to wrap that thing around a light pole the second day you own it. First day is going to be like, wow, this car can do so much. It handles so great. Day two is me pulling into a parking garage too fast and just like burying it in the toll booth. And that's God. It. That's my Gran Turismo experience. That's my warning. Hey, we got a big important work meeting to go to.
Ah, shit.
So we will call it here. You can check out what we published on waypoint.advice.com. Check out my Gran Turismo review. It's a lot of fun. I liked it quite a bit. We've also been streaming a whole bunch, thanks to Waypoint Plus. Thanks to everyone who signed up at waypointplus.com. This week, we streamed We Know the Devil. Ren and I continued to just be, I was going to say undefeated at war. I guess we didn't lose any of those battles.
We haven't lost a single battle.
Our peasant armies have taken some L's, but we, as commanders...
No, well, okay. We lost some peasants, but we gained so many Jade Warriors.
That's true.
They were promoted.
God closes a grave. He opens a draft class. And I think we'll be going back to that next week. People told us some wild stuff's about to pop off in Warhammer. So we might do at least one more stream of that to see some of the aforementioned wild stuff. For our Waypoint Plus listeners, let's see. We had to postpone manhunting, but we might still hit the schedule on that. What's been on the Waypoint Plus feed lately, Kato?
Last thing was the 101.
Kingsfield
101. But yeah, next up should be, depending on timing, Last of the Mohicans. Manhunting.
Movie fucking rules. So check it out. Worth seeing. It's going to be a great show. That sounds good. If you just want more Waypoint, you can go to waypointplus.com and subscribe. Not only do you get access to our premium feed, but you're also helping support Waypoint and everything else we do here. The theme music is by Bowen. The track is Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Learn more at waypoint.zone/BOEN. You want to follow me on Twitter, at Rob Zachney. Patrick?
I think we're going to talk about the Batman on Monday. So if you see it this weekend, you have questions, write into gamingadvice.com.
I'm going to cut and that and put that at the front.
Sure, yeah. But you can do both. Kyle, do whatever you want. So yeah, write those questions about the Batman, and you can follow me at Patrick Fulbeck.
The Batman.
Ren.
You can follow me on Twitter at Ren or Raven, where you can also see me retweeting a bunch of shit about the GMG union strike, which you should look into and potentially support because they're going through it right now.
They really are. It's been like a solid 2 years of horrible management practices that are finally coming to a head. I think for me, the real cruelty and malice was like when they decided to fuck up the AV club and just force people to move to LA for no good goddamn reason. That's where I was like, wow, this is just like animated by pure spite and hatefulness.
I can say it because I don't work there anymore. Jim Spanfeller, you're a fucking herb. Suck my dick from the back.
Kato.
Deep in the fucking throne world of Savathun, trying to get my level up for this fucking raid on Saturday. Wish me fucking luck.
All right. Well, that's us calling time on this week. We'll talk to you again next week, probably about Batman. Until then, fuck capitalism. Fuck Jim Spanfeller. Go home.